Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. There is an incredibly important battle underway at the moment, and there's been some very dramatic developments in it in the space of the past 24 hours. We're going to be talking about it at length in the course of this program. We've been discussing it, well, a lot lately, namely the inadvisability of the Federal Thrift Savings Plan investing the funds of military men and women and civilian government employees at the federal level in communist Chinese companies, some of which are very problematic. A man who has had some hard experience with investing in China is our first guest. His name is Joel Kaplan. He is born and raised, as was I, in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He is now a resident of Jerusalem, Israel, where he is studying to become an Israeli tour guide. He has been a small business owner in Western Massachusetts. He's also been an investor in Chinese companies. And Joel and I have discussed his experiences in the past, but this takes on a whole new urgency, it seems to me, in light of this impending decision by the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board and some very interesting expressions of opposition to this investment strategy by Donald J. Trump, the President of the United States. Joel Kaplan, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. It's good to have you with us, sir. I'm very keen to pick your brains once again. Well, let me talk to you about your experience quickly, Joel. You were an investor, it seems a rather sizable investor, in Chinese companies. Just characterize, if you would, at the sort of macro level, your experience with the transparency, the accountability, the material risk disclosure that investors like you are able to obtain vis-a-vis these Chinese companies.
Sure. I invested in several Chinese companies that were trading on NASDAQ. They had all been audited by U.S. investors with subsidiaries in China, and all of their financials looked great. At some point back in 2011 to 2012, it was exposed by various short sellers that their finances were fictitious. And like many of these companies, they were given chance by the authorities to produce their accurate and actual books and records. For example, right now, Luckin's Coffee is halted by NASDAQ, and it's been almost a month, and they're being given that chance. That's what happened to several of the companies that I invested in back in 2011, 2012. Ultimately, they did not produce their true and correct financials, and they got dropped to the pink sheets, where they traded for a number of years.
Penny stock kind of operations, I guess. Is that what you're talking about?
Although they weren't. They were $100 million companies. In some cases, they were $500 million companies, and they did have assets, and they did have factories in China, which I saw myself. One particular company was an electric bike lithium-ion battery company that opened an $85 million factory, which I toured myself with 800 other people, many of whom were in the Chinese military at the time. But when the veneer was pulled off of these companies, their underlying accounting was a fiction.
Well, Joel, let me ask you about this, because what you're saying is shocking insofar as, you know, you actually had some visibility on the nature of these companies. But even worse is what I understand is going on at the moment in connection with a lot of these A-shares that are in our capital markets is there's no visibility. There's no accounting. There's no transparency. There's no material risk disclosure because the Chinese government is calling these state secrets. And the SEC is letting them get away with it. Are you familiar with what's happening at the moment? And again, even your own experience obviously is a cautionary tale, but what about the possibility that these, you know, servicemen and women and their civilian counterparts are going to have money sunk in such companies with no due diligence done by anybody, as far as I can tell. Advisable or highly inadvisable, as far as you're concerned?
I would tell these military folks, and thank you very much for your service, you're better off going to Vegas, because I can supply Mr. Gaffney with the court documents. Even once the courts demanded that they show their true and accurate accounting, and I have notarized statements saying that I would have to come to China and in their offices view their financials that they were reporting to the SAT, the State Administrative Authority in China, not to the SEC. And what I learned from many astute businessmen that were over there is that many of these companies keep three books of records. They keep the accurate, truthful one. They keep one they show the Chinese government for tax purposes. And then they show another one to their foreign investors so that they can pull in money into their honey traps.
It gives cooking the books a whole new meaning, doesn't it? Three-card Monty, maybe, if to use your Vegas analogy. Let me just ask you, so here's what you're being told if you're a thrift savings plan investor, Joel Kaplan, is, well, if we don't let you into these Chinese companies as part of this new arrangement with the so-called International or iFund for the TSP, you're going to be deprived of opportunities that other investors have going into other funds. This is just a matter of fairness and giving you all these options. What would your response be to that, Joel Kaplan?
You know, the precedent has already been set. If anyone watches the movie The China Hustle or goes to the website stopthechinahustle.org, you'll see that already hundreds and hundreds of companies have been deregistered, first delisted by NASDAQ or New York Stock Exchange, and ultimately deregistered by the SEC. In the handful of cases where shareholders have gone to court, like myself, we are holding on after 2 or 3 years of hard-won court battles, meaningless court judgments. That means that the courts have determined what's called a fair value based on book value of these stocks when these companies disappeared. And many of these companies just disappeared. So they were claiming, when it suited their purposes, they were claiming to be making net profits of $20 million, $50 million, $100 million. But all of a sudden, when a U.S. court-appointed receiver went over to China, oh, all of a sudden, none of the money can be found. This shows that not only are they, that there's no, you know, in order to respect and trust somebody, a country has to earn that respect. And by the dozens and dozens of these cases, which maybe they can be put up on your website, I have all the documents, it shows that the Chinese, in these cases, these CEOs, these corrupt CEOs and the bad actors that Roger Robinson and people like that have spoken about, they have not done one iota to lift a finger to pay off the dozens and dozens of U.S. court judgments for U.S. investors that have already been taken advantage of.
So, in short, this would be a mug's game if your financial savings, your retirement fund, your future security is invested by this government board in such companies. Joel Kaplan, I'm sorry we are out of time for the moment, but this is a topic to which we would very much like to return with you, if you will indulge us. Your experience is a hard one, but your clarity on its lessons is really valued, and we appreciate you taking the time to share it with us. Come back to us again soon, if you would. Next up, we'll talk with Roger Robinson about the president's apparent decision on the thrift savings plan and more right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. It's a delight to say we're joined by a friend and colleague of many years, Roger Robinson. He is the president of RWR Advisory Group and also the chairman of the Prague Security Studies Institute. We're speaking to him in the latter capacity about the thrift savings plan and the very important developments that took place in the past 24 hours involving the president's attitude towards the advisability of compelling the investment, of American servicemen and women and other federal government employees in communist Chinese companies, including some that are, building weapons with which to kill them and us. Roger Robinson, it's good to have you back. I appreciate so much the work that you have been doing to raise awareness about this problem and the larger problem of which it's really a microcosm, namely the Chinese raid on our capital markets. Tell us about what we know of the president's attitude towards this thrift savings plan idea.
Well, reports are just coming out, Frank, that the president has been, at long last, given a thorough briefing on this matter. And as we suspected, the term that was used to describe his reaction was, quote, incredulous, unquote, which tracks pretty well with most Americans, I must say, certainly the patriotic Americans who are understanding that the notion that their retirement funds are going to be invested in U.S. sanctioned Chinese and Russian companies, advanced weapons manufacturers, South China Sea island builders and militarizers, and too many others to name, not to mention human rights abusers. All of this was abhorrent to the average American. And finally, the message got through. There were a number of blocking actions, you can be sure, of folks that were sympathetic to Wall Street's attitude toward this, which is to go ahead and transition that $50 billion into the MSCI, All Country World X U.S. Index, which is replete with these corporate bad actors. Luckily, it appears that we're going to narrowly avert this catastrophe. We're down to a week or two, maybe three, where this transition or transfer of funds was going to eventuate. And the president stepped in and said, in effect, not on my watch. One quote from the Oval Office was, "This must be stopped." Well, that doesn't sound like a president to me who intends to back away or change his mind.
Nor should he, needless to say. We've, of course, just heard a story about an individual American investor losing millions of dollars worth of his hard-earned money in Chinese companies that were ostensibly relatively transparent compared to the ones that are on the Wall Street markets today, who are not engaging in any kind of transparency or material risk disclosure. Those companies, their friends on Wall Street, the Borg, as I think of it, the Chinese Communist Party, are going to be coming after Donald Trump with a vengeance, presumably, making threats, making other coercive techniques in the service of trying to get him to back away from this decision. Are you making book on who's likely to prevail?
Well, I believe in the president's resolve, put simply. After all, this is a profit motive that is driving opponents of this decision. It's a matter of collecting Wall Street fees, folks that don't care about proper due diligence, fund managers and index providers and too many others to name that have not don't mind that China's not in compliance with federal securities laws, don't mind that they don't abide by SEC regulations on material risk disclosure, are fine with the notion of these human rights and national security abusers being in the portfolios of people who've given their lives to defend against those very same offenses. So the president's going to stick with the American people on this. He's going to stick with federal employees. But you can be sure that there's going to be a scaremongering campaign out of Wall Street about disrupting the markets. And oh, my gosh, the MSCI All Country World is the leading, arguably, equity international benchmark index in the world. They're going to basically say you can't do this because it will upset the entire apple cart. Well, guess what? The entire apple cart needs to be upset and overturned because it's turned into a casino that is not protecting investors in this country, much less our national security and fundamental values.
Yeah, it's interesting you use that metaphor because that's exactly what Joel Kaplan said. He thought that our men and women in uniform deserve to be respected for their service to our country, of course, but he said you'd be better off going to Vegas than investing your money in these Chinese companies. And of course, they don't want to do that, I'm quite sure, any more than I think you're right. The American people more generally want to see this done, especially in a moment when the practical effect of transferring $50 billion to China, or some substantial slug of it anyway, is to reward China for this pandemic. Roger, let me ask you about what next steps might be. What should come from this decision, assuming the president does stand fast and gets done through an executive order or the International Economic Emergency Powers Act or some other vehicle, the necessary blocking action to what the Thrift Savings Plan Board would otherwise do here?
Well, let's start with the indexes. Of all the offenses going on, the notion that U.S. index providers like MSCI, like FTSE Russell, like S&P Dow, like the Bloomberg Barclays Index and others are going into the Shenzhen and Shanghai domestic Chinese equities markets and scooping up hundreds of Chinese companies at a time. They have no idea who these folks are or what they do for a living, much less their subsidiaries and so forth, what kind of track record of abuses and offenses they've engaged in, what kind of material risks they pose to prospective investors. They add them to the index. They enter these investable vehicles like exchange-traded funds and the like and mutual funds, passive investment as it's called, and the American people, 160 million of us or more, end up with these bad actors littering their retirement accounts and their investment portfolios. And this is the kind of thing that just has to be brought to a stop. As I said, it's not even compliant with federal securities laws and SEC regs. So the point is, we're giving preferential treatment to Chinese entities, including bad actors, over those of their American corporate counterparts. This is completely unjustifiable. We need to do something about the SEC and its disclosure requirements. They've been falling down on the job is the most polite way to put it. And the list goes on, Frank. As you said, this is a microcosm. This is the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah. Those disclosure requirements, Roger, are something that's very unsettling. I think that most of us, whether we're actively investing in the capital markets, either individually or through our 401ks or whatever, assume that the SEC is, you know, the adult monitoring such stuff, that they're doing some kind of due diligence. You'd like to think that the MSCI is, or, you know, the exchange-traded fund managers are, but apparently they're not when it comes to these Chinese companies. And indeed, it's not easy to do because now they're treating all this kind of information as state secrets, the Chinese are. But talk a bit more about the Securities and Exchange Commission, Roger. You had a hand some years ago among your other accomplishments, and I did want to say I gave short shrift to your bio, but of course you were instrumental as the Senior Director for International Economic Affairs on the Ronald Reagan National Security Council in helping him cut off the cash flow to the last communist regime that sought our destruction, namely the Soviet Union. This is a moment when a similar kind of effort is clearly needed because we have another, arguably much more dangerous communist regime. But I'm just anxious to know what your thoughts are on having tried to get the SEC in the past to look out for global risk, why it is that they are so indifferent to this problem and apparently derelict in actually helping investors steer clear of very dangerous investment plays.
They have tunnel vision, Frank. They care about traditional financials. They care about commercial risk considerations, which is, of course, important too. But they don't look beyond that. I mean, between Wall Street and the administrators of Wall Street, this is going to breed problems. We have the same issue at Treasury. We have the, you know, the fox guarding the hen house at some level. And so when it comes to material risk, like a U.S. sanctioned entity, how could that not be a material risk that should be properly disclosed to prospective investors? Today, it's not. What about folks that are enabling the concentration camps of 1.5 million Uyghurs in Xinjiang? They get a pass because, you know, guess what? It's very inconvenient for Wall Street to open major new risk categories like national security and human rights. I mean, after all, you'd actually have to work. You'd actually have to bolster your risk management departments in whole new ways. Folks are trying to save money. They're giving short shrift to the world as it is and pretending as though national security and human rights are sidebars that don't matter. Well, they are central to the American people.
They are central, and I think it's fair to say that while people are enriching themselves massively by engaging in this kind of, I think of it as treachery, the people who are going to suffer in the first instance are the beneficiaries in whose name these investments are being made, including, if this Thrift Savings Board team has its way, are men and women in uniform. That's wrong. Roger Robinson, again, I thank you so much for your leadership in calling attention to this and helping the rest of us understand the stakes, both in this immediate context and much more broadly. And we look forward to your continued help at the Prague Security Studies Institute, to the Committee on the Present Danger, China, and others of us who are working this problem. Keep it up, my friend. Come back to us again very soon. In the meantime, good weekend. Stay safe. Next up, we'll speak with Arthur Herman. We'll visit with him about this and how we can get more broadly to the place we need to be, namely disengaging from communist China. That and more straight ahead.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, I'm very pleased to say, joined by Arthur Herman, a man that I have come to admire greatly for his body of work, including nine books, in which he has written powerfully about many of the most interesting historical events, but many that have great relevance to our own moment. And I'm thinking in particular of one that's a favorite of mine, Freedom's Forge: How American Business Produced Victory in World War II. His most recent book is 1917, Lenin, Wilson, and the Birth of the New World Disorder. Arthur Herman is a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute and a voluble contributor to the public policy debate on all manner of things. And we're always pleased to have him with us here at Secure Freedom Radio. Arthur, it's good to have you. Welcome back. Let me just invite you to join a conversation that we've now had with two of our previous guests, Joel Kaplan and Roger Robinson, about, well, an issue that I think is going to be of great historical moment as well, and that is the pending decision of a wholly unaccountable and otherwise unknown board called the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board that oversees and manages the thrift savings plan, the retirement system of the United States federal government. And as you know, Arthur, the decision was made several years ago, actually, and then reaffirmed late last year that they would begin investing some of the monies of those thrift savings plan beneficiaries, servicemen and women, and civilian employees past and present, in a fund that would mirror one that contains now some 11% of its portfolio in Chinese Communist Party companies. And I would just ask you, you know, sort of taking the historical perspective, if you will, the advisability or inadvisability of having our men and women, particularly those in the military, investing in the defense industrial base of Communist China, including weapons manufacturing concerns like AVIC and the Chinese shipbuilding industry.
Yeah, isn't that extraordinary, though? I mean, imagine a situation in which, oh, let's say in 1940, you would have U.S. Military personnel and their pension plans investing in companies like Siemens and Krupp, in the case of Germany, Toshiba and Mitsui and Mitsubishi in the case of Imperial Japan. This is how extraordinary a situation it is when we look at it from the perspective, Frank, that you and I have been pushing for a number of years now, but which I think finally the wheel is starting to turn and people are realizing. And here I'm going to say something which is going to be a little controversial, almost a kind of defense of the board's decision, that it is and has been very much business as usual for the U.S. government, for U.S. businesses, to conduct business, to invest in China, to invest in Chinese companies as if they were European companies or companies in Japan or Japan Today or in South Korea.
transferring production capacity there and relying on them for supply chains and so on.
And so what we have to recognize is that the leadership from the top has been missing until this administration. Until this administration, the leadership from the top has not been there to say, what are we really doing? It's a bipartisan failure. It's been an epidemic failure by both parties to recognize the threat, to recognize the danger of investing in Chinese companies. And now what we have, Frank, what we've come to realize with the COVID crisis is that this is not only investing in companies which are arming the People's Liberation Army for a possible conflict with the United States, for which they are, you know, fully prepared and are in many cases eager to incite. They can't wait. They cannot wait to have a shot at us. And I've heard that statement from Chinese Navy officials, communicated to me from a number of very trustworthy sources. But what we're also realizing is that China has, at the same time, by developing a monopoly over key aspects of our own supply chain for our own military industrial complex, we have a defense industrial base, that they have put themselves in a situation where they can basically turn on or turn off the spigot at will. We saw that. We saw a hint of that with regard to respirators and other kinds of necessary goods for defeating COVID. Right? We got a hint about that. They know, and pharmaceuticals, they know exactly. And exactly the power that they and leverage that they have in this situation.
Well, look, we shouldn't be under any illusion here, Arthur Herman. You, I know, have studied them closely enough and have respect enough for their acumen to understand that this is indeed a plan. This was not coincidental or accidental. They were building a strategic capacity to have this kind of dominance as a weapon to be exercised when it suited them. And we have played along with it, as you say, under both parties' leadership.
And we've gone straight in it with eyes wide shut. And now, fortunately, I still think, Frank, we are in a position now where the warnings that you and I and others have raised about this perilous situation, where we're finally beginning to sort of see the public opinion realizing that this can't go on. This is not a sustainable situation.
Well, the common sense of the American people is coming to bear for sure. And that's heartening. We've seen it now in several polls. We did one back in January under the banner of the Committee on the Present Danger of China before the pandemic. And recently, the Pew Research Center and a new John McLaughlin poll have both attested to this sentiment, which, if anything, is intensified, as you said, Arthur Herman, by the fact in this Chinese Communist Party pandemic. But let me ask you about this, because at the same moment that the common sense of the American people is operating, we're certainly seeing the influence that the Chinese Communist Party has on Wall Street coming into play as well. President Trump, we're told, has decided that he does not want this thrift savings plan to go forward. We've been discussing that with some of our other guests. But talk a little bit about the kinds of pressure that we should expect the Chinese to bring to bear on him to allow this deal to go forward and continue to profit at our expense.
Well, I think you're going to see it, first of all, from, as you pointed out, from certain Wall Street firms, very major Wall Street firms, who have a stake in China and in Chinese investment, both investment here by Chinese companies, but also, of course, of American investment in China and in Chinese companies and firms. And those relationships, which have been growing stronger and stronger over the last 2.5 decades, are not going to be put aside easily. No one's going to sort of say, oh, I'm at Goldman Sachs or at J.P. Morgan and say, oh, you know what, we made a big mistake. Sorry about that. Let's change our portfolios around and rejigger the way in which we think about investment in China. That's just not going to happen. And it's going to take a lot of political pressure, both from the White House, but also from Congress, and from regulatory agencies, including the U.S. Treasury, to force a change of mind in that regard. But there's also another factor in all of this too. We can't forget, Frank, and that is that the Chinese strategy that they've applied here with great effectiveness in the U.S. of making us dependent upon Chinese imports, particularly on certain strategic goods and commodities, not just with regard to pharmaceuticals and medical equipment, but other areas that are vital to our national defense. But at the same time, it's been a global strategy. So you also have Europeans who've fallen into the same syndrome with regard to China in terms of their investment dependence on China. You've got Asian countries, which are only belatedly now coming around to realize that this overdependence is hurting their strategic situation and their economic future. And you also then, too, have it easy for J.P. Morgan and for Goldman Sachs and other Wall Street firms and Silicon Valley firms, which have a global presence, to say, look, the Germans aren't making any major changes as a result of what's happened with COVID virus and in response to U.S. pressure. The French aren't. The Italians, the British aren't. The EU has been tempering its criticism of China in relationship to the COVID virus. You are really putting us in a very difficult position if we're going to have to buck not only China, but also our European allies and our global financial presence in other countries at the same time. So what you've got is a pressure which is applied around the world to keep the United States in line.
And this is, of course, let us be clear, as you've sort of implied there, Arthur, something that is not only in the service of the Chinese Communist Party, but it's very much being orchestrated by them through their various relationships around the world. And that's where I really want to go to in the second segment. You've been gracious enough to allow us to have a further block with you. Arthur Herman is to talk about how do we disengage, given all that you've said, from China, which is, I believe, clearly what the common sense of the American people is recognizing needs to be done, and thereby creating an opportunity at last to do it, something strategically imperative, as well as, I believe, fundamental to our future as a free country. We'll be visiting about that with Arthur Herman, the author of, among other things, Freedom's Forge, How American Business Produced Victory in World War II. A very important insight into what we need American business to be doing today. We'll be right back with more with Arthur Herman right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Arthur Herman of the Hudson Institute. He is a senior fellow there and has been leading for some time, both at Hudson and more broadly, efforts to be much more thoughtful and much better equipped to deal with the challenges that we're facing around the world, notably at the moment from the Chinese Communist Party. Arthur, we've been talking about the financial elements of this. There are, of course, as you've intimated, trade and technology and resource aspects as well. Talk a little bit about all of this specifically in the context of the virus and, well, now pandemic that the Chinese Communist Party has unleashed on us.
Well, what we were saying before, I think, really holds true, and that is it has really brought public opinion, I think, to a very important point, a tipping point with regard to our relationship with China. I think the whole fracas that arose with regard to Huawei and its development of 5G networks around the world, I think that was beginning to make people aware of the fact that doing business with China is not a good idea. But turning things around takes time. It takes pressure. Let me give you a good example of that. In 2015, that's 4 years ago, myself and one of my Hudson Institute colleagues, John Lee, went out to find support for drawing up a white paper on Chinese predatory trade practices, especially cyber theft and IP theft in certain key industries. And one of the industries that we targeted was pharmaceuticals. And we had wanted to do a study on the ways in which the Chinese had done the sort of reckless stealing of IP to produce counterfeit drugs, of the way in which they had been involved in any number of cyber theft that had a direct effect on the ability of American pharmaceutical companies to be competitive on the global stage. And we picked pharmaceuticals precisely because in 2015, it was a industry which really did not have a very large presence in China yet. So when we approached PhRMA, the Pharmaceutical Association here in Washington, that deals with these matters, because they had been complaining bitterly about Chinese IP theft, unfair trade practices, and so on, their first response was, stop, don't do that. And if you do, don't have our fingerprints on that, because we want to be able to establish a strong market in China. They were looking forward, this is 2015, and building that kind of a market here as well. So think about that. 4 years to bring about a change of attitude on the part of American companies, including pharmaceutical companies, to wake everybody up to what the dangers are in doing business in China.
But this is no secret, honestly, and it's infuriating that we still have, whether it's in the financial sector or, you know, any others, the tech sector especially, people clinging to this illusion that they are going to somehow, you know, be able to sell a toothbrush to 1.4 billion Chinese, justifying all of the sacrifices that are entailed in terms of their intellectual property, in terms of their assets, for that matter, in terms of their future market share. It's a shame on us, I guess, is the point. But I want to just ask you to sort of segue from that general observation to, so what do we do about this? We have got to disengage from the kind of relationships that you've been describing with China. That seems to me to be something, again, we're going to find resistance to, but how would you go about accomplishing it if you had your druthers?
Well, I think it is. It's a complicated process, and there's no way with other kinds of really dangerous addictions, and we've become addicted to imports from China, first of all. That's the most important aspect. We're talking about $500 billion a year of imports from China, and that's not, you know, plastic bowls and cheap consumer goods anymore. It includes things like computers. It includes smartphones. It includes components for high-end electronics, including it includes materials that are integrated into, for example, our own defense weapons systems. A whole range of imports, which really pose, if they were to be cut off or the supply limited, could pose a real danger to our future national security as well as economic security. So I think the way in which I would do this is that it has to be thought about as not a decoupling but a rollback of the relationship. I think we have a perfect opportunity now to look at the necessary rollback with regard to pharmaceuticals, with regard to healthcare products, with regard to all of the things that we've come to realize would be really necessary if we face another coronavirus or a variant outbreak again. The very fact that 3M had to get permission from Beijing to ship the 2 million N95 respirators they had manufactured in Chinese plants to the United States should be a warning to us about what the dangers are if this relationship is allowed to continue, if the status quo is left in place. So that's number one. Pharmaceuticals, healthcare products, and I know that there's already legislation pending in Congress to do that, and more power to them. The second area would be supply chains from China, which are part of our own defense industrial base, and that are going to things such as, for example, rare earths and minerals, in which China has a virtual monopoly on these commodities, which are important for U.S. weapon systems and for U.S. supply chain for our military. Then I would look at high tech and the ways in which we can roll back the degree to which we've become dependent on high tech manufacturing in this country. We're the ones who develop the innovative ideas and the technologies, but too much of that technology is then manufactured in China and elsewhere too. And we've got to find a way in which to reshore a lot of that technology so it's manufactured here, or at least manufactured in countries that we can trust and who we really see as allies. And I think with those three phases, with the development of a strategy that rolls back each, you will begin to see major changes, both in terms of how U.S. companies will look at doing business in China and realize it's a liability, and at the same time, I think you'll begin to see some change in behavior in China.
Let me just ask you, it makes sense, it seems to me, but the sooner the better, and we'll have to talk on another occasion about how, you know, to get that adopted as the strategy of the United States and implemented. But just a quick thought before we go, Arthur Herman, you've done a lot of work, including, of course, with your book, Freedom Forge, on the defense industrial base. We've talked a little bit about what I think of as the obscenity of having our men and women in uniform investing in China's industrial base. How would you characterize the condition of ours at the moment? And what do we specifically need to be doing in that domain?
Well, our defense industrial base is just unsustainable at this point. There was a study that came out of Peter Navarro's office, the Office of Trade Manufacturing Policy, in 2018, that made it clear that since 2000, over 25,000 firms have disappeared from our defense industrial base. That's not 25,000 workers, that's 25,000 companies that have simply dropped off the radar screen with regard to our defense industrial base and its supply chain. That's unsustainable. And this is the second part then, Frank. This is the second part of our plan. If we're going to decouple our economy from China in key sectors, we also have to look at ways in which we can boost and beef up those capabilities in those sectors here at home. And that includes workforce issues, that includes getting more training and deploying more engineers from our colleges and universities. There's big changes coming, Frank, and I think if we do it right, the COVID virus crisis could be as important a turning point for the American economy and our security as the building of Freedom's Forge and the arsenal of democracy was.
From your lips to God's ears, Arthur Herman, thank you very much for your time today, sir, for these insights. I hope you'll come back to us for a longer, more detailed conversation, particularly on how we fix this last bit, because I'm not so much sure that it's that the defense industrial base is unsustainable as our defense capabilities are unsustainable if we don't fix this particular problem. We'll talk about that more with you in the near future. Sir, thank you. I hope we'll talk with the rest of you again on Monday, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.